This is Table Talk with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman and your host, Michael Williams.
Hello, welcome to Table Talk. We're here today with Chief Ronnie Coleman at Station 11, Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Chief, welcome to Table Talk, and what are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to talk about what happens around conversations at the dining room table in a firehouse.
Oh, very good. Well, let's talk about how did you get the idea of Table Talk? Where did this come from?
Well, it originally kind of came up about the fact that a lot of the conversations that we engage in the fire service occur not in our formal training sessions, but in activities around a cup of coffee, a coffee break, a lunch break, a dinner break. That's where everybody kind of comes together in the firehouse, the dining room table. And so we got into this conversation about how often there are lessons to be learned and lessons to be taught that don't necessarily find themselves into official curriculum. They're just kind of informal. And the idea behind all this was to talk about specifics, skills and abilities and things of this nature that come from the lessons of life.
Well, very good. So part of the idea that we had at Fire Services Training Institute in doing this with you was the Chief's Clipboard, 20 Years of Ronnie Coleman, excerpts of all your articles in the Fire Chief magazine. Can you expand on that a little bit as to how we're making the transition from print media to vocal media?
Well, that's a good observation because, literally speaking, this process has been undergone for some 35 years. I started writing columns for Fire Chief magazine clear back in the 70s, primarily because it was a method of getting out information in kind of like bite-sized chunks. And I will readily admit that a significant number of my columns have started off in conversations around dining room tables, conversations with chiefs, training officers, fire marshals, etc. But as we've evolved over time now, we're finding out that more and more of the delivery system is more informal. The internet has changed significantly. We kind of have a standing joke anymore, and that is, who reads?
You know, people
just don't read. You know, they listen, they watch, but people don't seem to look at the printed word as much as they used to.
Well, the idea of what we have is to take what's in these books, Going for Gold and the Chief's Clipboard, put them into an audio format so people can listen to them at home. They can put them on their internet while they're doing other things. We can put it on web-based formats. We can put it on Facebook. Any different methodologies are available so that we can get the word out. Now, what's interesting about the Clipboard book is that it was copyrighted in 2006, but that's 20 years of material that led up to that. And most of what's in here is relevant today, perhaps even more so.
Well, a lot of the basic skills and abilities that we have to incorporate into our profession haven't changed all that much in 100 years. In fact, I would submit that if you go back and look at the days of training of guys who operated steam fire apparatus and the people who were the initial users of some of our incipient technology like motorized fire apparatus and so forth, we still have a lot of the same basic skill sets that were alive and well 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. The difference is the context of the use of that. Today, technology is moving at an incredibly rapid rate, but the fire service has always been adaptable. It's always been able to use the tools that society gives it in order to do its job. And I would submit, for example, a good one would be the steamer itself. We don't fight fires with steamers anymore.
No.
But on the other hand, the use of hydraulics and the formulas that we use and the principles of fire attack and all this other stuff, all of those have been subject to evolution over time.
Well, you'd say we don't fight fires anymore with the steamer, but in sort of an intellectual way, in a fraternal way, we actually still do. The pumps of the steamer still put out basically the same GPM. The fire station, the history of the fire station, how fire stations are laid out, very much go back to the steamer days and pre-steamer days, all the way up to the red lights on the front of the station and the reasoning for this and the design of PPE and what have you, all evolves from that. Maybe we are still in the steamer age in some age.
Well, I kind of refer to that as a Darwinian influence over the fire service, as we evolve constantly. I'm always startled when firefighters are surprised to find out that the pump capacity of early steamers was 1,250 GPM and 150 PSI at a 10-foot draft. We haven't improved on that in 100 years.
But the cost of doing that has skyrocketed.
Oh, good heavens, yes. One of our mutual friends, Dave Hubert, who operates a steamer that still operates. I was with him up in Montana recently where he put the thing into use. And he's always telling the story about the fact that that steamer, when it was first purchased, probably would be considered to be cheap by today's standards, like $10,000 or whatever the case may be. And what we're dealing with here today is so many of our applications are evolving because the fire problem is changing, the nature of the fire service is changing, et cetera. But the tools and the technology of it are still under our control. But we've got to have a new way of looking at that, a new way of approaching it.
Well, when we look at the transition of the fire service from the steamers to where we are today to where we're going to go, which will be covered in a future episode, change was inevitable in all those processes and resistance to the change. For example, when a diesel engine came out and they started looking at motorizing the fire service, there was a horrendous amount of resistance to that, all the way to the point that there were people putting steamers on motorized vehicles for fear that the motor would fail, but the steamer was reliable. We see that same kind of mindset today, do we not?
Well, I think what we're coping with basically is fear of the unknown. Anytime a new technology begins to emerge, the original reaction to a new technological shift is it won't work. And then the next stage is, well, it works, but I don't like it. And then the third stage is, well, how did we ever get along without that before? Almost everything that we do in the fire service is evolving as we speak. Many people have heard this term, 300 years of tradition unhampered by progress, a kind of a standing joke. I would submit to you right now that the fire service has probably changed its way of doing business more than any other section of government. We're doing things today that were unheard of 50 years ago.
Well, certainly within the scope of service, for sure. It's more than just fighting fire. In fact, that's one of the least amount of activities that are being done today. What has driven that?
Well, there's many factors at play when it comes to what constitutes modern fire protection. Many people have heard this term called all risk. It used to be we only went on fires, now we go on everything. And the all risk concept has really been primarily developed from community expectations. Kind of have a joke about the fact that how many people are going to call the police department for assistance in resolving a fire hazard problem in their community? Or how many people are going to call City Hall if they fall off their bicycle onto a sidewalk? Everybody thinks the fire department is the provider of emergency services under almost any and all conditions. And this has led to this concept called all risk. This is changing a lot in our society. Community expectations are that whenever something goes wrong, if a firearm is discharged, you call the cops. But anything else, you call the fire department.
Well, and it seems to be working well for most communities. When we look across the United States, California sort of takes the lead in many directions on the all-risk concept, don't they?
Well, I would submit that California, that all-risk is almost a function of topography and geography also. In California, urban wildland interface is common in many of the communities. Landslides, flooding conditions, hazardous material spills. We used to joke about the fact we have four seasons out here: the fire, the flood, the earthquake, and the hazmat spill. And that has led an awful lot of people in our communities to think of the fire service as being a service that responds to just about anything that happens in your neighborhood.
Well, getting into the issue of the Chief's Clipboard, 20 years of Ronnie Coleman, what got you started writing these articles?
Conversations with fire captains, with young battalion chiefs, peer chief officers, and so forth. Most of the time, most of my columns have been centered on somebody bringing something to my attention that they didn't thoroughly understand. Now, what about this, Chief? Well, what about that? And most of my columns have been centered around something that I kind of say it comes from the heart, the head, or the backbone of the fire service. Some of the things that I write about have to do with thinking your way through processes. Some of the things I write about have to do with emotional reactions to things that happen in firehouses. And then thirdly, a lot of my columns are based on skill sets. Like a good example would be, how do you present yourself in front of a city council? Those kinds of things.
What were your, as you look back and you go through your book, what were your more heartfelt articles that you wrote? Were the passionate topics?
Oh, that's a really difficult question to ask because I have several of them that kind of meet that category. I would say my all-time favorite column that I've ever written was called The 100-Day War. And it was started by a conversation between myself and a fire chief named Martell Thompson. Marty and I had gone from one department to another department several times in our career, and we got into a conversation one night about what happens in the first 100 days of a new fire chief. Some people call it the chief's honeymoon. Sometimes it's not a honeymoon. Sometimes it starts off with a fair amount of difficulty. That's my problem and my all-time favorite one. Although the one that's been asked to be reproduced and have been used by other people has to do with the history of the badge.
And can you elaborate on that?
Well, a lot of people in the military and in the fire service have kind of lost track of the symbolism of why we do certain kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And I did some research once into why we wear shields or badges on our uniforms, and started finding out that it went all the way back to the days of the Roman fire brigades, and it involved the Crusaders in the mid centuries. And then that evolved into the identification and the ability to recognize that the badge was a symbol of authority, but it was also a kind of a symbol of commitment. And so I wrote this article called The Badge, and it's been read at numerous Recruit Academy graduations. I've seen it reproduced in other books and so forth. And it's more symbolic than anything mm-hmm. else.
Well, I know in law enforcement they call it the shield, as in the old Roman shields that they mm-hmm. would hold to defend themselves, and that it was a symbol of protection. Mm-hmm. And so one of the articles that you have written actually in April of 1990 was Marketing Concepts, and the pull quote, "For the foreseeable future, the fire service is going to be competing for public funds. I think you could change the date to 2013. Nothing's changed in this, has it?
No. My concept that I was talking about there was that we've got to follow the principles of marketing if we want to sell fire protection. What I was trying to allude to there is things like branding and positioning and understanding the public's message and so forth is just as important for a fire department as it is to sell soap. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I have personal experience with the fact that fire departments that fail to do marketing often suffer at the ballot box because nobody knows who they are or what they stand for, and subsequently they don't get the tax support that they need. In other cases, fire departments are competing for public funds, and when it comes to making priorities work in a community, people don't use a fire department every day, but they do use garbage disposal once a week, and they use the parks maybe more often than they do the firehouse. So marketing is a very important concept for a fire department.
Now, when you say marketing for a fire department, we're not talking about what somebody does in the marketing of, say, a car or new television sets or computers. We're talking about a different type of marketing, aren't we?
We're talking about communications with the people who are paying the bill. Community expectations drives a lot of what happens in the budget process. If people look at a fire department as an unnecessary evil, then they quibble over every dollar and dime. On the other hand, if they look at a fire department as a necessary function and it has to do with the quality of life, then they say, well, we want certain levels of service. This is behind, and let's see if I can draw another comparison, is that every level of service that is paid for by the tax dollar is competing with every other level of service that's being paid for by the same tax dollar. And so what we're talking about is meeting community expectations, making sure that people know they're getting their money's worth.
Well, coupled with that is not just what you do that's positive, but reducing those things that you do that are negative, or that maybe they are positive within your own organization, but they're perceived by the public as a whole as being negative. What can we do to be better at marketing ourselves in a positive image than negative?
My number one rule when it comes to reputation management is don't do anything in the public's eye that you don't want to see on the headlines tomorrow morning in the newspaper.
You know, one area we're seeing that is becoming a problem in public safety, not just unique to fire, but EMS and law enforcement and what have you, is Facebook and those other types of social media where folks are going out, taking pictures, doing interview, what have you, and putting it up what they perceive to be their own or private utility, but in reality, they're still representing their organization.
Well, the cell phone itself has revolutionized the ability for the public to hold us accountable for what we do at the scene of an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Not uncommon to pull up to the scene of a working incident these days and see a half a dozen people standing on the curb holding their cell phones up, photographing what's going on.
And they don't necessarily understand what's going on, and I think that's where some of the conflict comes in, because it looks like there's an overreaction, or maybe there's an underreaction, or there's too many or too few, where in reality, that's not necessarily the case.
Well, there's nobody sitting in the audience trying to clarify for them what you're doing in front of them. I went on a fire one day when I was fire chief in a city, and I was in civilian clothes, and as I pulled up, I got out of my car, and I walked over to this crowd that was on the opposite street. My incident commander was standing on the curb, maintaining control of the emergency, and there was a guy standing on the other side of the street pontificating about everything we were doing as if everything was wrong. He was making all these remarks about, well, why are they doing that, and who in the hell told them to do, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so I walked up to him, and I said, excuse me, sir. I said, how long have you been in the fire service? And he said, looked at me, and he said, well, I'm not in the fire service. And I said, well, I am. What you're telling people is not what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is that we live in a world today of instantaneous communications and instant transparency of everything we do. It's how we behave in front of the public that determines what our reputation is. Granted, most of it's positive. Let's put it this way. When you pull up on an emergency in front of someone's home, they want your help and they want it right now. But that's not entirely what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the image you portray when you're driving down the street,
mm-hmm.
When you park your fire truck in a red zone, when you go in a grocery store to buy food for the guys at the firehouse and you engage in horseplay, you know, things of that
right.
nature.
Well, you know, one of the things that I observe is that it puts public safety, I guess everybody for that matter, on the defensive potentially, because you're having to justify things that up to now you've never had to really justify, whether they're right, wrong, or indifferent. There was a great quote recently in the PIO community about everyone wants to be a writer, but no one wants to be an editor. And that kind of applies in this situation where not only do we have to go do our jobs and we have to train for them and do all the things that relate to that, but we also have to defend what we're doing constantly, whether it be from the financial standpoint within our own internal bureaucracies or the public, as well as having to defend ourselves within the view of the public who wants to know why we did this, why we did that.
A word I would introduce into this conversation is called credibility, mm-hmm. and that is we are what we say we are. And we can prove it.
Well, I think it gets to the issue that we've dealt with in the past, and that is you have to look like you got your act together. You can do a fantastic job, but if you look like you're disorganized or disheveled, you're not going to be perceived as having your act together. On the flip side, you come in shiny, high speed, low drag, you got it all together, you may be completely fumbling the play, but you look good doing it.
Well, we'd like to think that most of the time that we really do are putting our best foot forward. I think that, you know, getting back to the original idea behind this is, I don't know how many times I've been sitting at dining room tables in firehouses and heard about something that happened yesterday. Some guy will tell a story about what happened at the scene of an emergency and then what the reaction was at that scene mm-hmm. of the emergency. And sometimes, let's face it, the war stories we tell are humorous to us, but maybe not so funny to the people that it happened to.
Well, there's no question about that. I've done articles on that very issue. The other thing is that the war stories build us up into having an inflated value of self-worth or building our egos or whatever, where in fact we were tempting fate ourselves and we're trying to justify what otherwise could be construed as bad actions or lack of judgment or what have you. It's a difficult thing to interpret sometimes.
Well, we go back to the column you asked me about earlier was marketing concepts. What I wrote that article, I must be, do you remember what the date was again?
Marketing Concepts, April of 1990.
1990, so that was a long time ago. The world's changed a lot, but the concept hasn't. The tools, for example, what do we call it? Twitter accounts today, Facebook accounts today, LinkedIn. I mean, I can go on with all sorts of things that we don't have the ability to go back with a real history on. We can't go back to 1990 with some of these concepts. They happened yesterday. My point being, though, that our skill set in our job is we have to be able to improve consistent with what communities are expecting us to be good at.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just assume that the way we've always done things is always going to remain acceptable.
Well, I would agree. But, Chief, we're up to the end of our first show here. And any closing thoughts?
Well, none other than the fact that we talked about this thing going on around a dining room table, and I strongly suspect that as we explore some of these other concepts, we might provoke some thought, and, mm-hmm. and maybe people won't necessarily agree with everything we're going to try to share in this this particular format. But the name of the game, of course, is to learn lessons from life.
Well, I want to extend a special thanks to the captain and crew of Santa Barbara County Fire Station 11 for letting us use their table here. And until next week, thank you for listening to Table Talk.
This has been Table Talk with Ronald J. Coleman and Michael S. Williams, produced and distributed by the Fire Services Training Institute. Production assistance by Mark A. Ward. Special thanks to Chief Michael Dyer and the Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Remember, train like your life depends on it, because it does.
Table Talk programming is intended for personal and organizational use only. Any duplication or commercial use is prohibited.